The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're tackling a word that's, well, it's incredibly powerful, but often used almost dismissively. That word is utopia.
Oh, absolutely. You hear utopian and, you know, often it just means silly fantasy, right?
Exactly. It's like the polite way to shut down an idea. Oh, that's very utopian, meaning completely impractical.
Naive, even.
And that's the whole point of the book we're diving into today. We're looking at Lyman Tower Sargent's Utopianism, a very short introduction. And really, our goal here is to reclaim that word, to understand why dreaming about a better society isn't just fluff. It's serious. It's essential.
Yeah, Sargent definitely doesn't see it as some fringe activity. He argues it's, let me get the phrasing right, a fundamental, persistent, and essential aspect of human culture. Basically, it's the engine for social hope.
The engine for hope. I like that.
Think about it. No significant change ever just happened. Someone had to first imagine things could be different. That imagination, that's utopianism. It's like the necessary first step for any real progress.
So who's the person making this case? Lyman Tower Sargent. He sounds like a foundational figure in this whole field.
He really is. Professor Emeritus of Political Science. But what's interesting about him, I think, is how he blends different approaches. Yeah. He's got the political scientist's rigor, you know, analyzing structures.
Right, the systematic thinking.
But he combines that with this broad understanding of literature, of history. He looks at the stories and the systems.
And it wasn't just theoretical for him, was it? He was actively building the field, co-founding the Society for Utopian Studies, launching the journal Utopian Studies.
Yeah, he put in the work. You get the sense he really wanted to pull this topic out of maybe obscure academic debates.
Or stop it from being just laughed off.
Exactly. To show that studying our dreams for a better world is actually a serious and maybe surprisingly practical thing to do. He really focuses on the connection between imagination and, well, political reality. What's its role? What's its goal?
Okay, let's get into the book itself. Sargent kicks things off by looking at the word utopia itself. It's got this fascinating ambiguity baked right in, going back to Sir Thomas More in 1516.
It's brilliant, isn't it? A total wordplay based on Greek. More cooked it up so it could mean two things at once. Utopos, the good place.
The ideal society.
And utopos, no place.
Ah, so it's good, but it doesn't actually exist.
Precisely. And that tension, the ideal vision versus the fact it's not here, not yet, that's kind of the heart of the whole tradition.
And Sargent's big argument flowing from that no place idea is that the main function of utopia isn't really to be a literal map to the future.
Right. It's not a blueprint you just, you know, build.
Its primary purpose, he says, is social critique.
That's the absolute core. By making us imagine a radically different, maybe even perfected society, utopias basically throw a spotlight back onto our own world.
Highlighting the flaws.
Exactly. The flaws, the things we just assume are normal, the hidden injustices. It forces us to see that the way things are isn't the only way they could be. It's not inevitable.
So how does he structure this exploration? He talks about three main ways utopianism shows up.
Yeah, three forms of expression. You've got literary utopias, the stories, then utopian social and political theory, the more systematic plans. And finally, intentional communities, people trying to live it out in the real world.
But he also includes dystopia right from the start, doesn't he? Not as the opposite, but as part of the same picture.
Yes, and that's crucial. He sees dystopia as a key part of the same critical tradition. It's all about using imagined societies to understand our own. The book really aims to give us this lens to see how visions of a better or worse future have always driven change.
Okay, let's unpack those three main forms, starting with the one most people probably think of, literary utopias, the novels, the stories.
These are the thought experiments, really. Safe spaces to explore radical ideas without, you know, actually overthrowing the government tomorrow.
Like social laboratories in fiction.
Sort of, yeah. After Moore got the ball rolling, the genre just exploded. You get these big 19th century visions like Edward Bellamy's Looking Backward, super popular book imagining this technological socialist paradise run by the state.
And that immediately sparked a reaction, right? Like William Morris writing News from Nowhere.
Exactly. Morris read Bellamy and basically said no thanks. His utopia was anarchist, pastoral, focused on craft, rejecting that whole industrial future.
So the literature itself becomes a debate. One utopia argues with another about what good even means.
Constantly refining, constantly questioning, which leads nicely into the second form, utopian social theory. This moves away from story and more towards, like, detailed blueprints.
The systematy stuff, Plato's Republic being the classic example, right? Designing the ideal state based purely on reason.
Absolutely. And that thread runs through history. You get thinkers like Charles Fourier in the 19th century. His ideas were incredibly detailed, maybe a bit eccentric. He designed these self-sufficient communities, the phalansteres.
Down to the last detail, apparently.
Oh, yeah. But then there's the really interesting case Sargent discusses, Karl Marx.
Ah, because Marx himself sort of hated the term utopian socialism. He called his scientific.
Who was very dismissive.
Yeah.
But Sargent makes a compelling point. That powerful, motivating vision Marx offered the end goal of a classless, stateless communist society.
The end of history, essentially.
That vision itself functions as one of the most influential utopian theories ever. Even if Marx denied the label, the goal he presented had that utopian core. It's that driving image of a fundamentally different world.
Okay, so we have stories, we have theories, and then the third form, intentional communities. This is where people actually try to build it, where the ideas, as you said, hit the ground.
Sometimes quite hard. These are the real world experiments. Think of religious groups like the Shakers, living communally.
Or social reformers like Robert Owens setting up New Harmony. Or even the Israeli kibbutz movement on a massive scale. And more recently, things like eco-villages.
Right. Now, Sargent is very clear most of these communities don't last forever. They often fail if you measure them by longevity or achieving total perfection.
So why are they important then if they usually fail?
Because, Sargent argues, their role isn't necessarily long-term success. It's experimentation. They run into problems, resources, arguments, human nature.
Sure.
But they fail forward, as he puts it. They pioneer things, new approaches to education or sustainability or gender roles that often get picked up later by mainstream society, sometimes without even realizing where the idea originated. Their value is in the trying, in the data they generate.
Failing forward, I like that. It connects to the idea of process. And this idea of learning from imperfection seems like a good bridge to dystopia. You said Sargent sees it as part of the same tradition, not the opposite. Why?
Because dystopias are warnings. Often they depict a society that looks utopian on the surface. Perfect order, efficiency, maybe happiness.
But there's a dark side.
A huge dark side. It's achieved by crushing freedom or humanity or truth. So they perform the exact same critical function as utopias. They make us scrutinize our own values by showing us a terrifying alternative. They just come at it from the negative angle. What shouldn't we become?
And the big 20th century examples really hammer this home. Sam Yatin's the warning about total collectivism, constant surveillance, feels very relevant today.
Chillingly so. Mm. Or Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. That one's terrifying in a different way. Stability and happiness achieved through conditioning, consumerism, drugs, sacrificing deep meaning for shallow pleasure.
Is manufactured happiness worth giving up freedom? It's a profound question.
It really is. And then, of course, Orwell, 1984. The ultimate nightmare of totalitarian control, manipulating language, rewriting history. You can't talk about state power or propaganda without referencing Orwell.
So dystopias, by showing us the absolute horror show, force us back to define what a genuinely good, free, humane society actually looks like. They sharpen our positive vision by clarifying the negative.
Exactly. They're a powerful, maybe even the most urgent form of social critique in our time.
Okay, let's try to pull together some of the main themes, the big takeaways from Sargent's work. The first one feels really fundamental. Utopianism is a process, not a destination.
Yes, this is so important. The real danger isn't in the dreaming itself. It's when someone becomes convinced they have the final perfect blueprint.
So that's when it gets rigid, totalitarian.
That's the road to dystopia, Sargent argues. He champions the striving, the imagining, the continuous questioning. The value is in that ongoing movement, not achieving some static endpoint.
That feels more realistic and safer.
Right.
Okay, second theme, the practicality of the impractical.
Right. Think about ideas that were once completely dismissed as utopian fantasies. Universal suffrage, letting everyone vote, abolishing slavery, having some kind of social safety net.
All seemed impossible pipe dreams at one point.
Totally. But history shows that what starts in the imagination, what gets labeled impossible, can eventually become reality. It tells you something about the ideas being called utopian today.
That they might be the common sense of the future.
Could be. Maybe the foundational policies for our grandkids. It forces you to take imaginative proposals a bit more seriously, perhaps.
Which links to the third point, critical utopianism. It's about maintaining that critical edge.
Yeah, the risk isn't dreaming, it's certainty. It's believing you have the answer, the only answer, whether it's a political ideology, a tech solution, whatever.
So always question, always debate, keep it open.
That's what keeps the utopian impulse healthy and constructive, rather than dogmatic and potentially destructive. That critical self-awareness is key for any big vision.
Surgeon's book seems full of these really concise, powerful ideas. Maybe we can share a few that really stand out.
Definitely. Like his core point about the function. The primary function of a utopia is not to serve as a blueprint for the future, but as a critique of the present. It's about the critique, first and foremost.
And on the flip side, about dystopia. Dystopias are a vital modern expression of the same utopian tradition, forcing us to ask what a truly good society would be. Fear has its uses.
And capturing that fundamental drive. The desire for a better way of living is a constant in human history. This utopian impulse is a fundamental driver of social change. It's just part of being human.
And that great line about the real world attempts. Utopian communities fail, but they fail forward. Even the failures teach us something valuable.
Each one pushes the boundary a little, adds to the collective knowledge. Sure. Okay, so how does someone listening take this framework and, you know, use it beyond just reading more sci-fi, I mean?
Well, one way is to actively use the utopian method for thinking about everyday problems. Sargent encourages this kind of thinking.
How did that work?
Take something that bugs you. Maybe your commute is awful or your workplace culture feels stifling. Instead of just thinking, oh, maybe we could tweak this tiny thing, ask the big utopian question. What would the perfect commute look like? What would the ideal workplace feel like if there were no limits?
Ah, so you start with the radical ideal.
Yeah. It's not about expecting to achieve that perfection tomorrow. It's about using that no place vision to critique the someplace you're in now. It helps you see that current setups aren't fixed. They were created. They can be changed. It breaks you out of just thinking in tiny incremental steps.
That makes sense. Use the ideal as a kind of North Star, even if you don't get there.
Exactly. And another application is media literacy. Use this lens when you watch movies, play games, read about new tech. Ask yourself, what current trend is this story exaggerating? Is this vision presented as a utopia actually hiding a dystopia? What hopes or fears about our society is it reflecting?
Like watching Black Mirror or even something optimistic like Star Trek through Sargent's eyes.
Yeah.
What are they critiquing or hoping for?
Right. It adds another layer to how you engage with culture. So wrapping up, what's the final takeaway for you? What really stuck?
For me, it was that profound reframing of the word utopian, seeing it shift from an insult.
From dismissive to essential.
Yeah. Realizing that this act of collective dreaming, of radical imagination, isn't just frivolous. It's actually, in the long view, deeply practical. It has to happen before any real change can take root. It gives value back to that imaginative impulse.
I agree. It feels like it legitimizes hope in a way. What about you?
I think it's the urgency Sargent implies, especially now facing huge global challenges, climate change, massive inequality, you name it. He concludes that this utopian function, the sheer ability to imagine that things could be fundamentally different, it's not a luxury anymore.
It's a survival tool.
Almost. It's one of the most practical, necessary tools we have for figuring out how to navigate the future. Our collective ability to dream better isn't just nice. It might be essential for actually building a better world.
A powerful thought to end on. Our dreams as practical tools.
Yeah.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by a Contra Foundation.